This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I've been wanting to read for a long time, read Ken Lange's words to you. I did read a wonderful essay he wrote in The Passenger Pigeon a few years ago. But here's more. And here's a good introduction about Ken Lange. This will soon appear on a newly acquired piece of property at Devil's Lake. And this is a interpretive sign that will be put up that will be in his honor on this new overlook to the east of Devil's Lake. The voice of the Baraboo Hills, celebrating naturalist Ken Lange. Ken Lange studied the human and natural history of the Baraboo Hills from the time he began working as a naturalist at Devil's Lake State Park in 1966 until his death in 2024. He wrote 9 books and dozens of other publications, also sharing his deep, wide knowledge of this complex and wonderful place with countless park visitors, students, scientists, historians, and conservationists, young and old. Ken made enduring connections with people and the land. His legacy of wisdom, humility, and love for the Baraboo Hills and its inhabitants continues to enrich our lives as we may find him in any forest, field, cliff, or glen. Ken mused, "I expect that I am imprinted on the Baraboo Hills. After nearly a half a century, we are inseparable. My life was changed forever when I accepted the position of naturalist at Devil's Lake State Park. This landmark has become my touchstone. It is comforting to know that the hills will continue to inspire future generations." And he went on to write, "Precious moments come unannounced. Enjoy them while you can." And I'd like to add, the Baraboo Hills comprise the largest expanse of unfragmented forest in southern Wisconsin, and are protected forests of the Kickapoo Reserve and Wildcat Mountain State Park are the second largest expanse of unfragmented forest in southern Wisconsin. These are extremely important areas for many, many animals and plants and insects, as most of our forests are becoming more and more fragmented. So I'll be reading parts of his book called Song of Place, A Natural History of the Baraboo Hills, published by the Belinda Locke Press, Baraboo, Wisconsin, in 2014, all rights reserved. And I thought I would read the chapter called Amphibians. I hope you're hearing all kinds of deafening frogs calling and singing. This book, being about the Baraboo Hills, will be hearing a lot about certain spots or areas in the Baraboo Hills. But remember that we are not that far away, off to the west. And if you want to find really good range maps for these salamanders, frogs, and toads, if you Google Amphibians of Wisconsin and go to the DNR page, there's a link to detailed state range maps broken down by county for whatever species you might be interested in. So Ken Lange's chapter on amphibians in Song of Place. Salamanders, toads, and frogs remind me of creatures that have just emerged from an ancient landscape, a primeval time when carboniferous swamps and tree ferns dominated the world. A total of 17 species of amphibians is known for the hills, 6 species of salamanders, the Eastern American toad, and 10 species of frogs, including the introduced bullfrog. Some species, such as the cricket frog, are rare, whereas others, such as the green frog and the blue-spotted salamander, are common. A good time to find these animals is when they are breeding. They are then concentrated in wetlands, and with the exception of the salamanders, which are mute, calling. So let's imagine that it's early spring and go salamandering and frogging. Esther, my wife, said that if you go out 3 nights in a row and fail to find salamanders, you turn into one. With this admonition in mind, here are some tips for finding the local salamanders that breed in forest pools. Obviously, you have to know where the pools are located So here is where topographic maps are helpful in finding pools otherwise hidden from view. If a person was interested in finding pools in the hills, another suggestion would be to follow the terminal moraine of the Wisconsin Glacier. There are two places in the moraine where pools are concentrated, one in Devil's Lake State Park on the former Johnson Farm and east to Highway 113, and the other on Point Sauk, where the communication towers are located. The breeding ponds, vernal pools, are intriguing but little known. They form in forests within depressions lacking a permanent outlet. They dry out most years, usually by late summer. They are free of fish, which would prey on the amphibian eggs, larvae, juveniles, and adults, and they're absolutely critical for the perpetuation of a small group of salamanders and frogs, and also such invertebrates as fairy shrimp. In a sense, they define these animals, and in turn, these animals define the ponds. Salamanders emerge from hibernation when the frost is out of the ground and under cover of darkness head to the ponds for breeding. The water temperature in the ponds is then around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Listen for the first calls from frogs and watch for worms above ground, for example on driveways after a warm rain. Henry David Thoreau's earthy advice was to sniff the air and smell the ground. Timing is everything. You might not find any salamanders, or you might witness a mass migration, especially if it's rainy or foggy. The breeding can be brief, sometimes just for a few days. For the amphibians tied to these ponds, it must be an incredible balancing act. Thawing ground, sudden storms, air and water temperatures, the duration of water in the pond, all this and more has to be part of the equation of when to emerge from hibernation and travel up to half a mile and more to a breeding site and survive. Numerous vernal pools are destroyed every year as we continue to develop the landscape, but the amphibians that depend on these ponds continue to move to them. Their evolutionary clocks were set long ago. After breeding, they disperse and become difficult to find. The blue-spotted salamander is the most numerous and widespread salamander in the hills. It is most characteristic of moister forest with vernal pools, but also occurs in drier woods. It also occurs here in other fish-free places, including an area mapped as Oak Savannah in early settlement time. Lakeshore pools, springy areas, marshes, and quarry ponds by wooded regions. One spring morning, a trap in a vernal pool held a squirming mass of blue-spotted salamanders, 49 in all. Several months later, this pool was completely dry. These salamanders, after breeding, disperse and generally remain hidden on the forest floor throughout the summer. Later in the year, they have been found here under rocks and logs, near ponds, and also in muck in shallow pond water, apparently hibernating. The tiger salamander, because of its longer larval period, tends to occur in areas with more permanent bodies of water, especially the larger and deeper ponds, including farm ponds, but it also inhabits vernal pools. Individuals are seen above ground from August into October, especially after a warm rain. These movements apparently include both young of the year and adults, all migrating to their hibernacula. Several tiger salamanders displayed in the Nature Center at Devil's Lake State Park had variable growth rates. One measuring 8 inches in total length when it was first exhibited measured 10 inches when it was released 6 years later. Another gained 2¾ inches in total length over a period of about 6½ years, and a third gained only 1/4 inch in total length over a period of 4¾ years. They were fed worms in summer and raw hamburger with calcium supplement in winter. The newt has been found in 6 forest ponds in Greenfield Township. The maximum distance between any two ponds is about 1 mile, and in Baxter's Hollow. The four-toed salamander is scattered throughout the hills in springy, seepy areas and marshy pockets within forests. Seasonal migrations are unknown, but dispersal by juveniles for distances of up to a mile or more from their natal sites seems possible. This species apparently is not sexually mature until an age of 2 years or more. An individual found in a bluff woodland near Leland in late October apparently was hibernating, while one found in mid-October in a punky log on the West Bluff in Devil's Lake State Park may have been preparing for hibernation. The red-backed salamander was listed by W. H. Canfield in his 1861 catalog of the animals of Sauk County. The only other salamander listed is the mud puppy. Redbacks in Wisconsin occur mainly in the northern part of the state, although they appear to be less numerous than in the eastern part of their range, for example, New Hampshire. This species is believed to inhabit the hills on the basis of two site records, one in the woods along the south side of Messenger Creek by the southwestern corner of Devil's Lake in July of 1969, and the other along Otter Creek in Baxter's Hollow in April of 1981. Redbacks and related species are unusual in several ways. They lack lungs. Breathing occurs through the skin, and they are completely independent of standing water, even for reproduction. Females lay their eggs in June under or within logs or in moss, and remain with them until they hatch in August. The mud puppy is the largest and also the most distinctive local salamander, with its conspicuous red, bushy external gills. It occurs in Devil's Lake, where it sometimes startles scuba divers. This species may eat fish and fish eggs, but in natural situations generally preys mainly on invertebrates. Canfield refers to it being often caught by fishermen. One caught in the Baraboo River in Reedsburg in 1874 elicited this description in a local newspaper: a queer fish, head like a pickerel, body like an eel, feet like a lizard, and a fringe around the gills like nothing we ever saw before or can find any description of in Webster's Illustrated Unabridged. A queer fish indeed. An early local name for the mud puppy was water lizard. I surveyed for salamanders in 1988, 1989, and from 2003 to 2008. Here are some entries from my journal. Tonight I look for salamanders in woodland pools in Section 18, Devil's Lake State Park, and find a blue spotted in one of them shortly after I hear swans overhead. On another spring evening with a clear sky, I am at Stopper's Pond at dusk while the western sky still is orange. A pair of wood ducks circle and land on the pond, then swim back and forth, the female leading. I find newts and a tiger salamander. One night at the Johnson Ponds, a screech owl could barely be heard above the din of the frogs. On this chill, uncertain spring day toward twilight, naturalist Donald Culross Petey has written, "I have heard the first frog quaver from the marsh. That is a sound that Pharaoh listened to as it rose from the Nile, and it blended, I suppose, with his discontents and longings, as it does with ours." Unquote. When the frogs are calling, you're surrounded by sound. Occasionally, you hear the trilling of a chorus frog. But mainly, you're overwhelmed by the quacking of wood frogs and especially the yipping of spring peepers, which in chorus sound like sleigh bells. The volume and intensity can be deafening, even painful. Quote, "They pierce the night like tribal singers," the poet Joseph Brukak wrote of spring peepers, "notes shrill and strong as cries of birth." There's something urgent here, something speaking to life, to the need to procreate, and this, of course, is what this is all about. The stark outlines of the still leafless trees reaching toward the sky, the trees reflecting on the water, the stars and the planets overhead, one has entered another dimension. Male frogs and toads, like songbirds, advertise their presence by vocalizing, and each species, like birds, has a distinctive voice. The first calls of some frogs, such as spring peepers and chorus frogs, can vary by as much as a month in different years. Generally, the wood frog begins calling soon after the peepers and chorus frogs. The pickerel frog calls for about 3 weeks each spring. And eastern gray tree frogs and toads usually are calling by the end of April. The trilling of toads in chorus can carry a considerable distance, and individuals trill uninterruptedly for up to half a minute. A researcher in Ontario, Canada, found that toads in breeding condition and in the absence of a chorus can orient to their breeding site from a distance of at least several hundred feet. Some could do so from at least a third of a mile. Metamorphosed toads, at first glance reminding one of dark grasshoppers, are first seen locally from late spring into early summer. Maturity occurs in 2 to 3 years. The adults, after breeding, leave the water and disperse widely into both lowland and upland habitats, including marshes, farm fields, gardens, and forest interior. Their original habitat is uncertain, but it may have been prairie or savanna. The thick, sculptured skin of toads helps prevent desiccation and also aids in thermoregulation by drawing water up the sides of the body along interconnecting channels. Because of rapid decline in numbers, the cricket frog was placed on the Wisconsin Endangered Species List in 1982. It was found at Devil's Lake in 1919, 1927, and 35, and regularly along the Baraboo River into the 1970s. There appears to be a substantial population in the Baraboo Valley east of Baraboo, including the Rowley Creek drainage, as cricket frogs have been found here by the author and John Exo beginning in 2003 in several marshes and ponds. Perhaps they've been overlooked, but it seems more likely that they have been dispersing from a remnant population, perhaps aided by recent flooding. The overall decline of this species in Wisconsin, which is at the northern limit of its range, may be related to a combination of factors including landscape fragmentation, short lifespan, generally less than 2 years, and lengthy periods of drought. Eastern gray tree frogs are widespread in the hills, whereas Cope's gray tree frogs are known from just a few localities, generally with eastern gray tree frogs. Cope's gray tree frog historically may have been a prairie savanna species, and the eastern gray tree frog a forest species. They can be distinguished by their calls, a musical bird-like trill in the eastern gray tree frog, and a faster, buzzier trill in copes. I've puzzled for some time over the places where eastern gray tree frogs hibernate. From my journal, in Steinke Basin on 15 April 2010, I hear my first tree frog of the year. Later on that day, just before a rainstorm, I hear one in our neighborhood in Baraboo, and I wonder again, as in past years, where did it winter? Surely not far away, under a nearby yard pool? But where would its breeding pond be located? 2 weeks later, I heard one in McGilvra's Woods. The nearest water is a mile away. Are these frogs hibernating far from water, and after emerging from hibernation, gradually working their way to the breeding ponds, feeding en route? Eastern gray tree frogs have been found by rock climbers in Devil's Lake boulder fields and bluff crevices at various times, mainly in May, and some tree frogs begin calling in the spring from the tops or near the tops of the bluffs, presumably at or near their hibernacula. They must be calling before their dispersal to the breeding site, but where are they breeding? Forest pools are scarce to non-existent on the bluffs. Are these frogs moving vertically to the lake shore, for example, Messenger Shore, for breeding? Or are they non-breeders? Tree frogs hibernating in the Devil's Lake talus might be an example of a species utilizing enemy-free space. The theory that the manner of living of certain animals has been fashioned by interaction with natural enemies. Bullfrogs from Ladysmith, Wisconsin, were released in Devil's Lake in approximately 1965 by a local resident, and this frog apparently has also been released in other areas, for example, a 1994 record for Honey Creek Valley. Its current status in the hills is unknown. The green frog is the most widely distributed frog in the hills, being found in every type of permanent water, including Coldwater Creek, where it tends to be darker in color. Its distinctive call, like the twanging of a banjo, is the last of the frog calls to be heard in spring, usually not until later in May, although green frogs are active before they begin calling. They are late breeders, and tadpoles may not metamorphose until their second year. The Baraboo Range appears to be a stronghold in Wisconsin of the pickerel frog, which prefers springy wetlands and clear Coldwater creeks. It is known from approximately 8 stations in Devil's Lake State Park, and at least another dozen stations in the hills outside of the park, mainly in the South Range. A total of 6 egg masses in Messenger Creek in Devil's Lake State Park in 1981 hatched in the period 1 to 19 May, with the tadpoles changing into adults as early as July, 75 days after the first hatching. The breeding assemblages of pickerel frogs tend to be dispersed, and the mating call, a low, snoring vocalization, is given rather sporadically and with little carrying power, in fact, less than in any of the other local frogs and toads. A pickerel frog may also secret itself, for example, under an overhang when it is calling. This species emits a poisonous skin secretion. A pickerel frog, along with 2 green frogs and a toad, were once displayed at the Nature Center in Devil's Lake State Park. One of the frogs died after several weeks, and about a week later the other frog died. Both frogs bloated and rolled over. The toad seldom, if ever, entered the water in the cage and was not harmed. Pickerel frogs on display in the Nature Center were never consumed by a northern water snake, although it did attack them, whereas the snake routinely consumed leopard and green frogs. Much of the pickerel frog's lifestyle might be related to its relative immunity from predation. If it is a species not heavily predated, it might not have to be a prolific breeder, as are the other species of local frogs. Leopard frogs in Baxter's Hollow seem to be mimicking the spot pattern of pickerel frogs, perhaps thereby securing some protection from predators. Leopard frogs are widespread but in fewer numbers in recent years from unknown causes. They apparently are not living as long as they once did, about 2 years compared to 3 or 4 years, and laying fewer eggs than in the past. Wood frogs are characteristic of forest wetlands, including the Baraboo River floodplain. Their quacking calls are a distinctive sound of early spring, but for only 2 to 3 weeks. In fact, in years with a surge of summer weather in April, wood frogs may call for only a week or so. The breeding congregations can involve many individuals. An artificial pond in Devil's Lake State Park with a diameter of about 18 feet contained about 130 adult wood frogs one spring. Breeding and development in this pond were explosive. A week later, the eggs hatched and the larvae were approximately a quarter of an inch in length. Concerns over declining populations of certain frogs, such as cricket frogs and leopard frogs, and their habitats led to an annual Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey coordinated by the Department of Natural Resources in cooperation with the United States Geological Survey's Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in Laurel, Maryland. Ruth Hine, editor and researcher with the Wisconsin DNR for 35 years, and a 2010 inductee into the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame, initiated the survey with further refinement of the methodology by Wisconsin DNR forest community ecologist Michael Mossman. The survey was begun in 1981, now consists of approximately 120 permanent roadside routes throughout the state. Four are in or adjoining the hills. Routes consist of a total of 10 stops, at which the volunteers listen for 5 minutes and record one of three call index values. Volunteers are asked to run each route a total of 3 times each year, early spring, late spring, and summer. Often in musing about the environment, I reflect that humility is in order. The world, after all, does not need us. In our absence, sun and moon and stars would continue on their celestial rounds, and salamanders and frogs would continue to seek their breeding ponds. I like these lines from local author August Derleth. There is surely a kind of magic in the voices of the frogs, something to remind a man, or his primal beginnings, of the primal beginnings of this earth, now so long taken for granted and so vastly unknown even to the countryman who walks it day after day. And that's the amphibian chapter in Song of Place by Ken Lange, long time and now gone from us, naturalist at Devil's Lake State Park. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.